The corruption charges engulfing soccer's governing body have heaped shame and humiliation on the game. That's how FIFA president Sepp Blatter described the situation on Thursday, yesterday, although he's rejecting calls to resign over the scandal. With FIFA facing the worst crisis in its 111-year history, the head of Europe's Soccer Confederation, UEFA, says he had told Blatter to go with tears in his eyes, but that the 79-year-old head of FIFA continues to refuse. In a speech opening a FIFA Congress in Zurich, Blatter said the turbulence of the last few days, which included the arrest of leading soccer officials at their luxury Swiss hotel, had brought, quote, shame and humiliation to world soccer. Delegates will be voting today for the presidency of FIFA, and it looks like Blatter will get reelected to another four-year term. Two criminal investigations into corruption at football's world governing body, FIFA, are underway, with seven top officials already arrested in Zurich. And that's what we're going to be focusing on this morning. Brenda Elsie is joining us as our guest. She's a professor of history at where I hang out a lot, at Hofstra University, a good colleague and good friend. Her first book is called Citizens and Sportsmen, Football and Politics in 20th Century Chile, which was published by University of Texas Press in 2011. Her forthcoming book with fellow historian Josh Nadel is called Futbolera, Women, Gender, and Sport in Latin America. It's expected to come out next year. She's also in the midst of a special issue of the Radical History Review at Duke University Press, writing about historicizing the politics and pleasures of sport. She's written for a number of publications and has continued to carry out research at FIFA, at the archives, which I understand she's heading to next week to continue the research into FIFA. Brenda Elsie, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us this early morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Mario.
It's good to have you. I guess you're still on for the research that you're scheduled to do in the archives of FIFA next week?
I sure am. I got a note from them yesterday that next Wednesday, when I'm on my way, they will open up the files that they've promised. But these are not files that are relevant to the investigation, so I'm pleased that they haven't been seized.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about your research, because it is fascinating, focusing on FIFA and football and its role in the political culture and the social and culture of Latin America in particular. But focusing on the new news of the day, the charges facing FIFA officials, your understanding. I mean, when I heard about it, I said, well, isn't FIFA always, focusing on this? There's always corruption involved in FIFA. How is this new?
I don't think the corruption is new. In fact, the indictment shows that it's at least 20 years old. And for most FIFA experts and people that study the game critically, it really goes back to the 1970s and comes from the beginning of television rights, which are, between television rights and sponsorship, those are the majority of FIFA revenue. And that's when really big money got into the game. So it's a very old story, but it's the first time we've seen charges that will probably actually be followed up by some real penalties. And so that part is new, and I think it's disconcerting, and people aren't sure who's in on it and who's not in on it. It's easy to forget with all of the luxury scenes at FIFA, with the cat apartments that were supposedly put up in New York City for some executive cats, that FIFA is a governing body that really governs lots of non-elite professionals, that govern the women's game, amateurs, youth leagues, so it really affects a lot of people. It sounds very esoteric, but I think that these charges are important in that sense.
Right. It's not simply the World Cup, which gets the highest profile, of course, here in the country, in the U.S., but also internationally. The other lower levels, if you will, if we can call it that, throughout the world. But maybe we can talk a little bit about the structures of FIFA, which makes it perhaps ripe for corruption, or at least perfect recipe for corruption, because it is a monopoly, and its tentacles reach at so many different levels around the world, and there's really no regulatory mechanism to watch its actions. So could you elaborate a little bit on its structure and how it kind of opens itself up to this kind of malfeasance?
Well, the structure itself consists of the main headquarters in Zurich, and then there are six confederations, and there's only two involved in these charges. One is CONCACAF, which governs Central America, the Caribbean, and North America, and CONMEBOL, which covers South America and is the second oldest confederation, the one with Europe. And so there's these six confederations, and then there's all of the national associations that you know of, you know, like U.S. Soccer, the Football Association of Nicaragua, Russia. There's 209, between 205, 209 of these. And then underneath that, there are, you know, thousands of associated clubs. So it's a gigantic organization. What has happened is that the corporate influence and sponsorship has become so lucrative as to make many of these positions, people susceptible to this kind of corruption in these positions, because they don't come with a decent salary, right? These are supposedly amateur-type commitments that people make to the organization.
Well, you mentioned Russia in your answer there, and they're really angry and demonstrating first support for the president of FIFA, as he's about to get reelected today, Sepp Blatter, but also indicating that this is a kind of overreach on the part of the United States, that the U.S. seems to be doing this to time with the eventual World Cup hosting in 2018 of Russia, which Russia is really excited about, of course. What about that? Is the U.S. involved in overreach for its own kind of political gains, or what's your assessment of that?
No, I don't think so. I think you have many of the people that are charged have, you know, dual citizenship, residency in the U.S., or direct involvement in U.S. soccer. And so I don't think the feds are overreaching. The indictment is 166 pages long. It's worth taking a look at. It's public and online if people are interested. And I think that Russia, predictably, like Qatar, are going to defend their bids, which are coming up in 2018 and 2022. And they've already invested an enormous amount of money in this. And they have the support of Sepp Blatter. And I think, ultimately, they feel as though the Europeans and the U.S. leagues are trying to jockey to get those World Cup moves, those World Cups moved.
Right.
And yeah, so I think that's their kind of angle in that. I think the U.S. actions were fairly popular, especially in South America, where different, you know, journalists and even football governing, soccer governing bodies are really excited about this, and I think it will help them to pursue justice in their own countries.
Mm-hmm. I was hearing. I want to get your thoughts on this. I was hearing a report, and I think it was on the BBC late yesterday, and they were interviewing some representatives who were on their way to, or if they were already there in Zurich for the FIFA meetings. A couple of folks from Yemen, another representative from I believe it was South Africa, applauding Blatter for kind of reaching out and going into other countries that traditionally would not have necessarily had the opportunity to host the World Cup, South Africa being one of them. And so perhaps the assumption that they're making or is basically saying that, well, the U.S. wants to have it in their space, and the Europeans also, and that they, you know, feel being somewhat displaced from that. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that there is this colonial image that rubs a lot of people the wrong way in, you know, the global south of the U.S. coming in and, quote unquote, cleaning up the game, when indeed most of the corruption was within the North American section. And, you know, so I think that's one factor that's going to generate a little bit of tension. And it does also come from the fact that most U.S. audiences don't tend to recognize the fact that Blatter and João Havelange, the Brazilian head of FIFA before him, have reached out and expanded the World Cup berth, have expanded development funds in a much deeper way than their predecessor. So I think there's a loyalty there that comes from real gains, real gains in development money that have developed the women's game, the youth game in the global south, and have expanded the World Cup to include them. And I think that kind of loyalty will pay off for Blatter today when the election comes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're speaking with historian Brenda Elsie. She's a professor of history at Hofstra University, and she's author of a couple of books. And her last book was Citizens and Sportsmen, Football and Politics in 20th Century Chile. Brenda, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I wanted to, you know, focus on it now. There's an interesting piece in Common Dreams website by Sarah Lazar, where, and I'm just going to read a couple of notes from it and then ask you to respond to it. She writes, as the U.S. Department of Justice in concert with European officials launches a much publicized crackdown on FIFA corruption, bribery, and racketeering, the powerful multinational corporation Nike, widely believed to be implicated in the scandal, has been largely shielded from the same public outing. The discrepancy adds to suspicions that despite the tough-on-white-collar crime rhetoric of the DOJ, the agency is in fact far more willing to aggressively go after the Zurich-headquartered soccer enterprise and smaller companies than powerful multinationals and financial institutions. So corruption, obviously, Brenda, goes, there's a few players in that. It's not just the ones who are getting their hands, greased, their palms greased, but those who are greasing the palms. Does corporate America, the corporate world, globe, have some responsibility in this, and are they being shielded in this indictment?
Well, we'll see how much responsibility they have. I'm not sure if they're being shielded or if it's a matter of so many people and standing in the way of them. But I think there is a consensus. Most people feel as though Nike very probably paid bribes to sponsor the Brazilian national team. And the reason that that's important is that Nike worked very hard to expand its soccer base and consumer base in the 1990s out of the U.S. into Latin America, Asia, and Europe in order to compete with Adidas and Umbro and other brands, and that was really successful. So that indeed some of that success is linked to illegal bribes, and we'll see what happens. I think that we may see more success in the case of Brazil, looking at that particular allegation. The Brazilian federal police raided sports marketing, a couple of sports marketing firms yesterday. So I think they may use this initiative coming from the DOJ, but I don't see anything in the indictment that so far gives us any indication that they're going to go after them, so that they do look shielded. So you heard Loretta Lynch's phrase, I'm not exactly sure how she phrased it, but basically indicating without a name that it's a apparel company based right in the U.S., and that's clearly Nike.
Wow, that's it's going to be interesting to see. And do you think they'll be finally cleaning house throughout FIFA, or is this just kind of window dressing?
You know, it's really hard to say. A lot of this investigation was started by FIFA, and this isn't to excuse FIFA, but to say some of these people were liabilities for Sepp Blatter. Someone like Jack Warner, and I'm just going to give you a quick example of how low some of these guys stooped. Jack Warner apparently took funds earmarked for Haitian relief. So really, we're talking about a real unethical person in many, many ways. And I think that they had become liabilities for the organization, and they knew that for a long time. They had tried to bring out a report in 2012, 2013. So it's hard to say whether FIFA will just say, and it depends a lot on the election today. You know, Blatter is being challenged by Prince Ali bin Al Hussein from Jordan. So we may see a surprise.
Okay. Now, look, just quickly, Brenda, we've just to finalize your book, your first book, Citizens and Sportsmen, is incredible. And then now you have the forthcoming Futbolera, Women, Gender, and Sport in Latin America. Incredible research. Now you're heading to FIFA. Could you just give us a quick idea of what it is you're working on? What's cooking?
What's cooking for me is the relationship between FIFA and women in soccer, and essentially the active underdevelopment of women's football in Latin America. The part played by FIFA, but also the confederations, especially CONMEBOL, in shutting down the women's game when women organized the first World Cup of women's football in 1970. In 71, FIFA refused to recognize it, patented the rights to the name, and then promptly took it over. And so it's about the unseating of grassroots soccer and the consolidation of FIFA's power in a new realm, which was women. Before, they tried to, you know, sort of block them from playing. There's official bans in Brazil and in other countries. And so that's what I'm there researching. And I'm not sure if it's just it's just that they don't think women's soccer is important still, or if they just think I'm not that important, but they keep letting me go and get their record.
I don't think they really know what you're up to. That's good, Brenda. Well, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to have you on the radio. Thanks for waking up early with us. Brenda Elsie, good friend and colleague of mine from Hofstra University. She's a professor of history.